The Mac Observer is a Mac Geek Gab, number 190 for February 2nd, 2009. Greetings, folks. Please turn off your cell phones and enjoy the ride. I am Dave Hamilton. That is John Braun. Hi, John. How are you?
Yes.
It all depends on your perspective.
Yep. It's me and, of course, Pete. Hi, Pete. How are you?
Happy Groundhog Day, guys.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. You know, I want to smack that thing. Well, it's weird today. I don't know about you, Dave, but here in Connecticut, it was 50 degrees, so I think he's wrong. It's pretty warm today. I thought we were supposed to get snow tonight.
Tomorrow, I thought so, too.
But still, 50 degrees, that's unusual for this time of year, I think.
And it is Groundhog Day, so the Mac Observer is Mac Geek Gab, number 190 for February 2nd, 2009.
Stop.
I have to stop? All right.
That was a classic film, if you hadn't seen it. So Groundhog Day, you know, it was funny because it was kind of silly as a kid. But then when you watch it and you get older and you get a little perspective on the meaning of life and all that, it's really a deep, deep film, I think.
All right,
about
you? Really got to get onto the show.
Oh, I watch Groundhog Day.
It's good. It's good.
It's a fun movie.
But yeah. Moving right along.
So we do have a lot of stuff. Last week, John, we'll start with a couple of things related to last week's show, number 189. And we had a zillion comments about our advice to use VGA as
I'll note we got a fist shake.
Well, and that's so we got a bunch of notes and we have to pick which one or ones to include into the show. And since we tend to be a little snarky about things at times, I figured it was only fitting to include the snarkiest comment that that we got, which still in all in good fun here.
Hey, this is Ryan, longtime listener, first time caller, and guys, I think I may have to shake a fist at you. VGA? Really? All right, in regards to what your caller was saying about trying to hook his MacBook up to a big screen TV, I have a MacBook, I've got a big screen TV, I've got a mini DVI out, I've got a little adapter that came from Apple, I've got a $20 DVI to HDMI cable that came from Apple. It only carries video, but all you got to do is then plug in your audio, and as you guys correctly noted, you can either do the analog out or you can do the digital if your audio equipment will support it. So really, VGA, no. Go digital. The MacBook recognizes exactly the resolution involved. It recognizes the TV as an external monitor, gives the right resolution, and it's all a crystal clear digital signal. Thanks, guys, and aside from this one, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Ryan. So, yeah, Ryan and everyone else who wrote and called in and sent smoke signals and all that, absolutely right. These do exist. It's a Belkin cable that Apple sells. I couldn't find one. I did some quick searching at Apple. There's the mini DVI to HDMI cable at Apple's site. I couldn't find a regular DVI to HDMI from Apple, but perhaps there's one and I just couldn't find it. But they certainly exist elsewhere if you hunt around.
Yeah, and I found one, and you know, actually that'll come up a little later. Though, you know, I just want to step back a bit, Dave, and you know, especially now that, you know, some of you may have heard that there's this, you know, digital transition happening.
No.
You haven't?
No, I've never heard of this.
Well, not that it matters to us. Oh, stop it. Anyways, we'll find links to it. But I just want to distinguish the types of data here and why Ryan did shake his fist. So if you're looking at quality, would I say? Let's say that. Maybe toss it around a bit. But you have two phenomena, digital and analog. Analog is typically a continuous phenomenon. And digital is more a discrete phenomenon, whereas analog things pretty much can have an infinite value over a certain scale. Digital, they have these kind of, you know, discrete values. And just to translate that from what I said there, which may make not a lot of sense unless you're into electrical engineering or something like that. But the thing is, digital is kind of an all or nothing deal. So if you do get a nice digital, if you get a digital signal, it's great. it's probably going to be, you know, kind of a one or zero thing, kind of like digital is. Analog, you can get kind of a weak signal because there's all these different states that the signal can take, not just, you know, one or zero as digital does. So the general comment is that if you had to take analog video, which is pretty much all of them, you know, starting at a low level, you know, so composite being the worst, S video being a little better, component video being probably the best analog version, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that.
And then when you kick it up to DVI and HDMI, that's a different world. Now, no, to bring it back to this digital transition, the thing that's going to be happening, which a lot of, you know, I don't know, it seems a lot of people are freaking out over it, but I guess it really only impacts people that have antennas, which are an analog signal. If you have cable, then it's probably digital cable, though it could be analog cable. But if you're pulling off of an antenna, you know, into an old style TV, that signal will change from analog to digital very shortly, or they're going to stop broadcasting in analog, which means unless you got a magic box that converts from the old analog to the new digital format, you're not going to get any television. And I guess they had a whole fiasco with coupons and people are getting them when they don't think they need to. To me, it's pretty clear. I think, Dave, if you have an antenna into an old style TV, you got to get a converter box or you're probably not going to get TV for much longer.
Yeah, although I think even if you have analog cable coming in, don't you then also need to get this converter box depending on your cable company and all that good stuff?
I think it's only broadcast medium, which this affects. So analog cable, I mean, they're mostly moving people over already. I mean, my company just did Just for Nothing. So I don't think they're cutting off analog cable. I think as long as you got cable, you're okay. I think it's just broadcast that's going to get affected.
For some reason, I thought if you didn't have a cable, and this, see, here's where the confusion comes. So I'm going to back up here. Ryan, you're right. If you are going to do video from your MacBook Pro or your MacBook, do the HDMI thing. I will note, though, somebody said in the comments that there's something about the way I'm looking for the link that John sent here. There's something about the way the Mac Mini sends out digital signals, and many AV receivers will not work. So it's just the receivers. So for audio, so check the comments. We'll put a link in the show notes at the Apple Store. But definitely, you know, the HDMI thing is the way to go because you're going to get better, whether it's better quality or not. It probably is, but really what you've got is more of a one-to-one relationship between what your Mac is sending out and what's being displayed on the screen. And so you have much more control over what's going to happen. And I've experienced this too. Sometimes with VGA, I can't get the aspect ratios to line up and the screen's all funky and all that. Whereas if I had done HDMI, presumably it would just see exactly the resolution of the TV and we'd be all set. So that's the HDMI thing. We're going to come back to this. But now talking about this digital TV transition, I think February 17th is the date. Pete was just saying.
Was going to be. I think they did. Yeah, they pushed it ahead.
Did they?
If they haven't yet, it's in the big stimulus bill that they're trying to.
Okay, because it's supposed to be February 17th, which is 15 days away, and DTV.gov still reports it as February 17th. So maybe they're pushing it off to June, maybe not. But yeah, there's a big countdown that says 15 days, 2 hours, 15 minutes, and 36 seconds.
Well, you know, I think it does impact analog cable as well. But I mean, as far as I know, you know, when my cable company offered to switch me over for nothing, I'm like, okay.
Sounds good. Yeah.
So I don't think there should be any reason, unless you got a real, you know, backwoods, you know, cable company, that you're not already on digital. I'd be curious what people are running into. I mean, you know, yeah. I got a cable card, so and you do too, I think, on your TiVo. So
on TiVo,
we're all set. We're not going to notice anything.
Yeah, we've got a TV up in the bedroom that's connected directly, and I don't know if that's going to work or not. But then we have one TV in the kitchen that has no cable box, and that's definitely going to be impacted by this. So
all right. So yeah, if you got the old rabbit ears, then it's time to turn them in or get the converter box adapter.
All right, let's move on to JD here. Let me find his comment, because JD has a couple of comments about our previous show. He does get into this DVI to HDMI thing in the middle, but also talking about, we had a listener who had an issue where when they were connected, one way they could see other machines on their network. When they were connected wirelessly, they could see other machines. When they were connected wired, they could not. And he's got another spin on that's sort of interesting, John. And this is JD.
Hey, John and Dave. JD down here in Texas, just outside Dallas. Hey, on your show 189, JR was asking about an issue between his desktop and laptop, and I'm guessing that the WRT Linksys router might have API isolation enabled, and that would prevent communications, I'm pretty sure, between the Wi-Fi component and the wired component. So he might want to turn that off and try again. The second thing was Michael in New York was asking about playing his Mac on his Plasma, and I have a Plasma 42-inch Panasonic that did not come with a video input for VGA. And I did obtain from the Apple Store, I think it was from Belkin, it's DVI to HDMI, and that worked perfectly. I also run the digital audio cable straight down from the Mac Mini to a receiver and enable, it actually does full surround sound. So you get Dolby Digital, you know, 5.1 out of the Mac Mini. Hey, I had a quick question also.
Yeah.
Lately, it seems like the podcasts are coming down as a video file rather than an audio file. Mm-hmm. Wasn't sure if that was something new. Trying to put my iPod Touch to sleep when I listen into the podcast, and of course it shuts down because it thinks it's video. So just a heads up. Other than that, keep up the great work. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing is AP isolation, I believe, is the switch in the
AP. I would say that's probably access point.
Yep. And it can isolate different network segments from the other, if I understand it correctly, which seems to be the same understanding that JD has. So if you have that enabled, it might not let things on the airport network talk to things on the Ethernet network and vice versa. So,
yeah, why would you want to? I guess there could be good reasons
sure,
to do that.
Security.
I don't know.
What have you. But yeah, as far as this podcast being download to video thing, it we are aware of it. What happens is if you are on your iPod Touch or your iPhone and are downloading the Mac Geek Gab directly to it, there's a bug. And the bug exists, and we've been in touch with Apple on this and CacheFly. The bug appears to exist in the Apple firmware, where somehow it gets some header from CacheFly that any AAC file downloaded directly to the iPhone or iPod Touch from CacheFly, the iPhone itself decides this is a video file. Now, if you download the file to your computer and then sync it across to your iPhone, it doesn't happen. It's only if it's going direct down, only if it's an AAC file, and only if it's coming from CacheFly. So Apple is aware. They say they're going to fix it. It was not part of the 2.2.1 update. So I'm not sure, when they're going to fix this. The folks at CacheFly are sort of at a loss because they don't serve the data any differently than they do anything else. They send the right MIME type headers and all that good stuff. So, but they are working on it, and there's been a conversation going back and forth trying to figure this out. So that's where we're at. All right. Our first sponsor for this show is, are we ready to go into this, John? Or was there something
yes.
you wanted to add? Okay.
Nope.
Our first sponsor for this show is Smile on My Mac, and they've got a couple things going on. They've been doing this Mac Switcher Bundle at MacSwitcherBundle.com, and it has four apps in it. I'm going to talk more about one than actually it's got three apps and then one thing. It's got a bunch of screencasts from Don McAllister's Screencasts Online. Then it's got 1Password, which you've heard us talk about. Cool little app. Couldn't live without it. Which adds window-like window switching to the Mac, and we'll I'll leave that for you to check out more because I haven't checked it out. And then there's Text Expander, which is easy to talk about because I couldn't possibly live without it. It's one of those things I install it and I forget it's there until it's not there. The idea behind Text Expander is you have things that you need to type over and over again. Maybe it's the way you sign off your emails. Maybe it's your address. Maybe you've got, some code snippets that you use. and you assign these to much shorter characters. So, for example, if I have my email signature and instead of typing out my whole email signature, I type comma SIG and then boom, it'll replace that comma SIG with a, you know, my entire signature, whatever I want it to be. You can create all kinds of different snippets. You can make them application specific so that they happen in one app versus another. Yeah, Pete's pointing out a whole bunch of things. Different URLs that you're going to use, spelling fixes. If you've got, you know, things that you mistype often, like for example, if you type the T-E-H a lot, well, you could just go put T-E-H into Text Expander and have it automatically change that to T-H-E and boom, you're typing and you're good to go. So I use it constantly. It's a great little app. It's $30. Of course, you can download a free trial, but you can get it as part of this bundle for $50. And then you get, you know, 1Password, which and these 10 different screencasts. So check out MacSwitcherBundle.com. It's from the folks at Smile on My Mac. They put this together. And of course, they are people we've known for a long time, and they're trustworthy and all that good stuff. So I am happy to be able to talk to you about them all at smileonmymac.com. And then of course, macswitcherbundle.com. Moving on to Ken, right, John?
Oh yeah.
Lots of audio comments tonight. I like this. This is good. It doesn't burn up my throat.
Hi, John and Dave. This is Ken Marcus from Kailua, literally Kailua Beach, Hawaii. Calling at 4 o'clock in the morning while listening to Mackie Cab 189. Listening to the story of the fellow who was trying to share file share from a Windows machine to a Mac machine. This is a little roundabout, but something that ought to work and work very well, because it's sure working well for me, is something you turned me on to in the first place, which is Dropbox. Up to 2 gigabytes in files free and pretty inexpensive for up to 50 gigabytes. But you can send 2 gigabytes for free. Install it on both machines. Drop the files you want into whichever site you're trying to transfer from. And pretty much by the time you get back to the other machine, they should be there. You can drag it out of the folder on the Mac side and Shazam, you're there. Anyway, great show. Thanks a lot. Aloha.
Well, there you have it. That's an interesting solution, John, right? Because the Dropbox would do that. The only thing is, if the files are big, you've got to wait for one machine to upload it to the Dropbox cloud. And then, of course, the other machine to pull it back down from the cloud to, you know, it's not a peer-to-peer thing with the Dropbox. It syncs everything to a server that's, you know, kind of out in the ether there. So that would be the that's the only drawback to doing it that way. But, you know, it would work. And
sure,
perhaps that's more important than the bandwidth.
Yeah. Now, another thing you could do, it's easier on the Mac side, but if you want to share files between a Mac and a PC, of course, you could also use MobileMe. And they have a very nice utility. So on the Mac, it's pretty straightforward. Is that your, you know, iDisk will be or should be in the, you know, the bar on the left in the Finder. On Windows, it may be a little more challenging to try to mount that drive, but they have something that we will link to. Called iDisk Utility for Windows XP. And what that will do is let you enter the login information, which should be provided by the owner of the account, if you're not the owner. You know, you can set up your permissions like you want. I think either, you know, read-only or a read-write volume. But it mounts it as a Windows volume, so it makes it appear as any other volume on a Windows machine. So that's another way to go about it. You know, similar to Dropbox. Well, no, not really.
Well,
no, it's server-based. I mean, it is all on a virtual disk in the cloud, so.
Yeah, you're right. No, it is. The Dropbox does things a little bit differently, and this is a good opportunity to talk about this. iDisk, you can do one of two things. You can only store the data in the cloud, where it does not keep a local copy of the data. That can be kind of a weird thing. It can make navigating through your directory trees really, really slow. But
okay, you went away for a bit. Sorry.
That's okay. With Dropbox, what you do is it's actually just syncing a folder on your Mac, and so the files are there normally. It's no problem. Whereas with the iDisk, if you keep a local copy, it stores it all inside a bundle, a sparse bundle. Mm. So it gets a little bit funky with backing that data up. You know, we talked about how it backs it up in slices and all that, but the Dropbox is syncing an entire folder. So it's just normal files on your Mac or on your Windows machine. So, you know, to be frank, Dropbox has beaten Apple at the iDisk game. Apple has a lot of catch up to do. You know, right now, Dropbox lets you do things like I can send out a link to only one file in my iDisk or Dropbox, which is where the iDisk is supposed to have that functionality, but it doesn't yet. Okay. So, you know.
All right. But hold on, Frank.
Okay. Yeah, you got the steamroller going. Go.
No, but what I will say is, at least on the Apple side, now I don't know about the PC side, but you can turn on iDisk Sync.
If you would have listened, that's what I was talking about.
Well, no, I said you. I'm sorry, you dropped out for a moment. That's why I said sorry. So, okay. So that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, if it syncs back down to a disk image, and
I didn't hear you say that. Okay.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So,
but I don't know if there's a way to do iDisk Sync on the PC side. So,
oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
They do install, you know, I don't have a Windows machine in front of me, but Windows does install, much to the fist shaking of some Windows people. It kind of gloms a Mobile Me control panel into the other control panels, and a lot of people aren't too crazy about that. Like when you install QuickTime, I think, or iTunes, it'll sneak in a Mobile Me control panel on the Windows side. I'll have to look and see if they also have iDisk Sync on the Windows side. If they do, it's a viable solution. But as you point out there, you know, it does do it differently from Dropbox.
Yeah. Yeah. I still use iDisk for all my my stuff, because the data that I store on my iDisk is more than the 2 gigs I get for free with Dropbox. But I'm real close to paying for the 50 gigs with Dropbox and just saying goodbye to the iDisk. Unfortunately,
I'm looking here now. I think the normal account, I'm looking here now, and I have 20 gigabytes. And then let me see, they have a handy, throw us some money and update your storage button there.
Now, the iDisk is 20 gigs.
Oh, it's a 20 now.
Yes, the iDisk
that's what 20. I see right now in my status bar. Yeah. But you can purchase more if you want.
Yeah, well, the idea, I only use about 4 gigs, but which is why I'm still on the iDisk and not on Dropbox. But, all right. I've got a question that's totally targeted at you here from Jed, John. Jed says, hey, guys, hope you're doing well. Just curious if you've played with the iFi and iPhotos geotagging yet. I'm thinking of getting the Explorer card and curious how it's worked for you. John, I know you use one, so go.
Absolutely. So here we go. Here's what's happening. So we were unsure of this. And actually, you know, I tweeted about this. I went to someone at the, you know, iFi. Hey, does your stuff, is iPhoto and I going to work with your card? Now, of course, because it wasn't released, I mean, they may have had a early version or a, you know, beta version, or it sounded like they didn't. I mean, I don't know how Apple works with their app programs, you know, as far as developers. But they didn't know, but I didn't see any reason why it wouldn't work, because what the iFi does, and here's the only caveat, people who use the iFi will know this, is that you have the card, it uses Skyhook data, which Skyhook embeds or Skyhook maps Wi-Fi and cellular access points to a latitude and longitude. The only thing is that you have to run the pictures through what they call the iFi manager. If you just plug the card into your computer, you will not have the geotags. You have to run it through their iFi utility, which then injects the pictures, will upload them to a number, I think it's like 20 different sites, you know, Flickr and all these guys, or right into iPhoto. If you go about it that way, and I confirm this, you know, as soon as I got my disk in the mail, I excitedly installed it, and it actually, iPhoto came up and said, hey, you want me to update the location data on your photos? I'm like, oh, cool. Or do you want me to activate Places, which will parse all the data? Of course, it also ran Faces, which on my system, it took like 2 hours, but and we could talk about that another time. I have mixed feelings about it. But anyways, after that, all the features that we saw in the keynote were there. It would identify certain photos, like in New York City, it would actually say, oh, Grand Central Station, which in fact, they were taking a Grand Central Station. Or cool. So as far as I can tell with my card, which is the iFi Explorer, they have a couple of different ones. It's perfectly compatible. Now, the interesting thing, though, is in iPhoto, you may be wondering, you know, where is that data and what does it look like? And the thing is, in the old iPhoto 08, if you highlighted a picture and said get info, it would show you what I think we call the EXIF data, which is extended picture data. In the new iPhoto, it doesn't do that. When you say get info, it'll show you, maybe only if it has a geotag, it'll show you the photo, won't tell you where it's been taken, and show you a little, I think it's a Google map or a Yahoo map of approximately where that is. What you have to do now to get this additional data is instead type Command Option I within iPhoto 09, and then it will give you all of the additional tag data, the data outside of the image data itself, and it's broken down into categories. Like, for example, when I looked, I had five categories. Image, which is, you know, pretty much the dimensions. File info, which is info about the file, the size, and all that. Location, which, and here's the key, that's where the latitude and longitude data is, which, and I could imagine that, yes, someone could think of different ways to represent latitude and longitude and confuse other utilities, but that's something I just figured nobody could screw up, and as far as I can see, nobody has screwed that up. And then the other EXIF data is also the camera, so, you know, information about the model of the camera, maybe the firmware. And then the key thing, which for a lot of photographers may be useful, is they usually embed a whole bunch of stuff like the exposure, the shutter speed, all sorts of other parameters about the photo, especially if you're in a manual mode, which can help you understand why the photo that you just took looks great or doesn't. So basically the answer is yes. I think iFi timed this perfectly in that, you know, there's still, most cameras do not geocode. So these guys have a really nice solution. The only drawback is sometimes it doesn't get it right because it's not a GPS. It's using Wi-Fi. And I've seen this. The problem is Wi-Fi access points sometimes move around.
Right.
But you can always edit that data.
Oh, but, that's, you know, true. Yeah.
Yeah, from what I've seen, you can. I haven't done it, but my understanding is that you can edit the data within. You're not stuck with that data in the, you know, in the picture.
Yeah, I wonder how you edit it. Is it something you can edit within iPhoto?
Hold on.
Okay. Now we need we don't have the
time
Jeopardy
for the
music.
Filler music.
Yeah, that's right, queued up. That's right. Actually, we do. We've got the filler music. Oh, we don't.
I think it may be through one of the interfaces. Bringing up the extended data, I cannot edit the data from there. I'm sure you could do it through Places if you bring up the photo. I haven't tried it, so I'll give it a whirl, and maybe there's an article on that somewhere.
Yeah.
But seeing as how you can tag photos without any image data, I would imagine the ones that are already tagged, you can re-tag, because they did show that, or they demonstrated that the keynote, that what if you didn't have a GPS?
Right. Oh, right. Of course. Of course.
I just don't remember exactly where you do that. So.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. It does make sense that you would edit that. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. It's time to talk about, iPhone
things.
Right? Aren't we gonna? We're not gonna talk about that. We're just gonna talk about. Before we get into this rant here, because this is just gonna go off on a.
Is it?
Who knows where it's gonna go? Mm-hmm. I want to tell everybody about Circus Ponies, our second sponsor here, and Circus Ponies Notebook. Now, you know, this app is built to collect all sorts of data that's somewhat related, not necessarily related, and pull it all together into different electronic notebooks to store all these different things. Now, you can create notebooks for maybe one for home, one for work, or maybe one for each different project you're doing at work, or if you're a student, for each different class, you know, all different, you know, if you've got ideas or instructions, stuff that you would typically maybe scribble on a piece of paper that's all related to something, you just pull it all together, notes, clippings, all the different to-dos. And then once you've got them into Notebook, you can use what they call their Multidex, which is a search engine that lets you search for information based on what it is you remember about that data. So if you remember maybe a name or a number or the date that you entered the data in, you can search that way. And then once you pull this data together, you can create in one notebook, you can have maybe a PDF inside it and a drawing that you did, and you can OCR some data in or whatever, and then pull it all in, and then you can print a PDF or you can publish your notebook to the web, and you can actually export directly to your Mobile Me account. So it really flexible, sort of for organizing all different related but not related pieces of information. There's a 30-day free test drive at circusponies.com. And then, of course, you purchase it for $49.95 U.S. And there's some discounts if you want to buy, I think, three copies. Might be, I think it's $100, and there's a student discount as well. Pete, I know you and your son both use Notebook and enjoy it. So
it is, yeah. It's a nice program. Really nice Mac interface. Well thought out. They've put a lot of thought and effort into it. There's no doubt.
Well, we enjoy it. We had one listener write in that they had won a copy of Notebook, and they said, "I use it for clipping recipes while I'm surfing the web, grabbing bits of information that I would otherwise put on a sticky, organizing my projects, saving miscellaneous bits of family information." So for folks that think it's just for busy executives, it's not. It's useful for anybody, and I highly recommend it. And so thanks, Kevin, for writing that in. And again, it's circusponies.com Notebook.
Okay, I got a flash update here.
All right. Oh, good. Excellent, John. Yeah, go.
So basically, get info on the picture in iPhoto 09. If you get info and there is a town or city listed, if you click on it, it will then give you a pull down. Like in my case, it's finding a bunch of other towns in different states.
Right.
Or I'm sure if I typed in something new, and I did verify. So once I typed in a different town, it re-tagged the photo. And then I verified if you open up the extended info, it did put in a new latitude and longitude. So
excellent.
iPhoto does let you edit some of that EXIF data. Pete did have a question here about a general purpose utility for that, which is a fabulous question that we'll have to address in the future.
Cool.
I think so. I'm sure somebody makes one that lets you edit those fields, because it's pretty much only text or just additional data, you know, glommed on the end of the photo.
Right. Right. All right, so Mark has a question, and well, let's see where it goes.
Are you getting ready?
Hey, John and Dave, yeah. This is Mark from Los Angeles, long-time listener, love the podcast, really makes a big difference in my household as far as tweaking things and just trying to fix things. However, I'm stumped. I have two computers, a MacBook and then a G5, and I'm taking my iPhone up through the cloud with my MacBook, and I'm trying to set it up on the desktop to so that everything just, you know, syncs up with the cloud, and I have my calendars and address book info on all computers and iPhone. However, for some reason, it's not working on my desktop. Everything else works except for the calendar. Says that calendars could not be synced due to inconsistent data. I've gone into the advanced settings and I've reset all the sync data there. I've actually even gone into my accounts and opened up like a fresh new account where there's nothing in there and set it up to sync with my Mobile Me account, and nothing's, and that, for some reason, it just will not sync the calendars. However, my wife has an account on this computer, and she's able to sync her calendar info with her Mobile Me on this computer as well as her iPhone. So I don't know if maybe that is the problem, that I'm only allowed to have one Mobile Me sync account per computer, but I was wondering maybe if you guys could figure it out, because I'm stumped. This is where you cut me off.
And it is where we cut
him
you off.
Well, Dave, to me, the answer to this is very straightforward, and I went to the Apple knowledge base, and I found an article titled Mobile Me, Troubleshooting Inconsistency Alerts When Syncing Data. And it says, symptoms with Mobile Me Sync, you may encounter two alerts about inconsistent sync data. The exact text of the alerts will vary depending on what type of data is affected, but in general, the message states, and it goes on, and then it describes some, what I can see here, pretty straightforward, you know, maybe four different steps that you take, and everything's golden. So I think we should just, you know, recommend. Now, I don't know if you had a chance to look over what this article recommends.
Yeah, did. It tells you.
Okay, so are we done? All right, go.
Yeah.
Get that fist going.
You know, dude, so it tells you, okay, you know, pick the computer that has the most up-to-date information and tell it to overwrite Mobile Me. And then you know, oh, no problem. And then it'll sink back down. And oh, if it doesn't, then go and you know, reset all your computers. And then, you know, no problem. It's definitely going to work. And it walks you through this step that, you know, does this, runs this, what is it, reset.pl, the resetsync.pl, this little profile that goes and runs all the right scripts. And, you know, that it all looks so good on paper, man. It does, mm-hmm. doesn't it? I mean, it looked good to you, didn't it? It sucks. Yeah. Okay. It sucks. It doesn't work. It's terrible.
Whoa, O'Reilly's, calm down.
The only way to get this to work is one of two ways. And the first one might not work. So you can go and, you know, do what they say and unregister all your machines from MobileMe and then go sync. But in my experience, that has not solved exactly this problem. The only way that I've got it to solve this problem is to go into iCal and on the computer that you think is your master, right? So the one that has the data that you want to blow away MobileMe with, you go in and you choose backup data, and then you go and get the backup and you copy it to another one of your Macs. And you blow away MobileMe and you restore everything from that backup. And then you overwrite MobileMe from that computer. There's something in the whole sync database that once it gets screwed up on one machine, you can't have that machine overwrite MobileMe anymore. It just doesn't work. So you got to, you know, overwrite it from another computer, and then you're good to go. So the idea is whatever computer is the one that you've been telling MobileMe to reset from. You know, you go into the system preferences, you go to MobileMe, and you say advanced, and you say reset sync data, and you say overwrite data on MobileMe with data from this computer. Whatever one you've been doing that with, that's the one that you back up from, copy the data to another computer, restore, and then overwrite MobileMe from that other computer. That's that's the way that I've had success with it. It's a convoluted, screwed up procedure. But, you know, really what needs to happen, we talk about nuke and pave all the time. And I think nuke and pave is the solution here. But it's a different kind of nuke and pave. We need Apple to nuke and pave MobileMe. That thing is the most convoluted, screwed up system in the entire world. Really? You know, our government has better stuff than MobileMe here. Yeah. Well. Yeah, no doubt.
I've never seen it have problems, though I have had problems with Palm or a lot of, you know, technologies that try to sync events or just any sort of data. I don't know. I should explore what the difficulties are, because I see these things that happen as a developer. I'm like, how could you possibly do this? Like, I've had multiple times on my Palm events, and actually I got a special utility to clear them out, but I would have events with the same name, the same time, the same date, and it will duplicate them.
Oh yeah,
ad infinitum. It'll make 5, 6, 7 it's like, can somebody check and say, oh, you know, there's already one of these, maybe I shouldn't put 5 more here?
Yep.
I don't get it. Again, when you're getting different data from different places, and especially trying to do simultaneous things like that, I can understand how things could get mucked up, but there should be a way to go through and clear it out.
So that's, and, that's, you know, the big thing.
We need the big red button, what you're saying, for MobileMe.
Yeah. And so here's the thing. The red button should exist. You know, they talk about, you open the iSync app and you go to the preferences and you click reset there. Or if that doesn't work, then you go and you run this Perl script that's buried in mm-hmm. the bowels of your system, and that'll do it. You know, or maybe there's these other folders you can delete. But so, What's happening is there's actually two levels of syncing happening, right? There's the syncing from your Mac to MobileMe, and that seems pretty straightforward. I have data on my Mac. I sync it with this database in the cloud. Some other computer comes in, checks in with the database, and syncs down. That's true, but it's not iCal syncing with the MobileMe in the cloud. iCal syncs with the sync services engine on your Mac. And then other things can sync with that, too. You know, if you're running an app like BusySync, that registers as a client there. You know, if you've got other things that are syncing to your Mac, like your Palm or whatever, that registers with a client there. And so there's this convolution that happens. Is that a word? It is now. It happens on your Mac before it ever even thinks about syncing with the MobileMe cloud. So that's the issue here, is you get this massive knot tying happening right on your Mac. And it can get to the point where your Mac's so confused, it doesn't matter what you sync out to MobileMe. It's never going to be right. And that's what typically that's what goes on. And you need to blow away what happens on your Mac. And in this case, the way to do it is get the data somewhere else, blow away MobileMe. And then when MobileMe comes down to your Mac, it says, ah, yeah, sure, I'll blow that stuff away now. No problem. You know, that's
yeah.
This morning, right. I went round and round syncing my calendars. I have a couple calendars that I subscribe to. And it was I have three computers that sync to MobileMe for the calendar. And as each one would sync, it would blow away the changes that the last one did and then add its own. And I had to go round and round probably 15 times until finally all the sync engines got in sync with each other. And then I was able to, you know, re-add these subscribed calendars, which, of course, still don't show up on the iPhone. But, you know, that's.
Yeah, I actually had one time where I was really freaking out because it got really confused. And fortunately, I had one machine that had local data that was the truth. And the thing was, it blasted the data on my palm away. When the sync was done, I'm like, okay, let me see how everything's doing. And the data on my palm was empty because, of course, I think what it did was took a fresh database on the computer and blew away the database on the palm. Now, again, fortunately, I had the data on multiple computers. So the local copy, I was able to push that to the cloud and everything was okay. But that's kind of worrying when that happens. So anyway,
it's just like, you know, I mean, I find MobileMe is just a really kind of a pleasant part of the day, similar to when you wake up first thing in the morning and you voluntarily swing back and kick your toe into the bed frame there, you know, that metal edge of the bed frame. And if you do that first thing in the morning, really MobileMe seems like a dream.
Or, you know, I mean, I think I told you this, you know, I thought I was having a nightmare about somebody running a jackhammer across the street.
Uh-huh.
It was real because they're demolishing a building and actually it's gone across the street from me. Yeah. But there was a guy running a jackhammer at like 7 in the morning.
Yeah, that's a nice time.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. See, compared to that, MobileMe is just a really kind of a pleasant, it's wonderful.
All right.
What it is.
Where are we going?
Right.
Scott?
Yeah, let's do Scott. Let's do this. Let's get there. Ready? Scott.
Do this thing.
Hello, this is Scott Jungren from beautiful Seattle, Washington. Longtime listener, frequent panic attack caller. I've got an issue where I just got the Mac pack that's got all the OS and iWork and iLife. What I really want to do is just totally do a clean install of my operating system and just move over very few of the programs that I've had, because over the years I've added so many things, taken so many things off, and I have an iMac, maybe you've heard of it, and it seems to run slow. So I really want to take advantage of this, having the 10.5.6 latest software, just do a clean install. And I'm wondering if that's the way to go and just bring over an application at a time, or if you know a program, or if the migration assistant maybe has it where you can actually select the programs that you want to transfer over and leaves everything else. I made a super duper copy on an external FireWire drive, so I had all of it backed up. But again, just want to clean out all the, I think you call it proof. So let me know if that's the best way to do it. Usually I do an archive and install, but like I say, I end up with all the leftover junk and a bunch of programs that I don't really need. I'd rather just kind of add them as I need them type of thing, if that makes any sense. So this is the point where you will cut me off.
And we have cut you off. Oh, yeah.
So there, you know, to me, this brings up that there's a basic question here. Do you want the best way or the easy way?
Well, it sounds like he's tried the easy way and it hasn't left him with the easiest to deal with solution. And that was bad English for a good concept.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. Because I almost always, I would recommend that. I mean, in theory, you could have taken a system that was on 10.0 and do updates and updates and updates and updates. But I don't know. I would say a rule of thumb is maybe, if you're, you know, well, I don't know, if you're a point level behind, like if you're on 10.4 and you want to upgrade to 10.5, then maybe the migration assistant is okay. But if you've got something that's, you know, a couple of major revs back and the cruft is really building up, then you may just want to. The thing is more labor intensive, though, because, you know, definitely this is always good advice. Keep track of your apps, especially keep track of keys and stuff like that and the original media. And I think that's the thing that trips up a lot of people is, oh, man, where did I put my disk for whatever? Now, you know, more stuff is a software download and less people are putting this stupid DRM on stuff or license keys or whatever. So, but to me, that's the big thing is that it just takes a lot of time to reinstall everything. And this, you know, it's pretty much how you have to do it on Windows, or at least that's been my experience. There really isn't a nice way to migrate the old apps and app data over.
Well, on Windows, you wouldn't want to either. I mean, you've got to clean out more often on that side than you do on the Mac anyway. But yeah, I think, you know, for Scott here, certainly the migration assistant, it'll pull over your apps, but it's going to pull over everything and not necessarily what you want. I think, as John said, and this is what I did a year ago when I got my new MacBook Pro. I had migrated not only from OS to OS, but from machine to machine. And, you know, my profile and all that stuff had just sort of come with me from, I think, at least 10.3. And potentially even, you know, one step back from that. So I did the clean install and I just started installing apps from their disks or as you said, John, you know, from downloads. And it really wasn't all that bad. You know, the trick is if you've got your data in one spot that makes it easy to bounce your data around, right? That's the biggest key. And then, like you said, you know, you got to have your installed disks and your serial numbers, but
yeah,
I installed apps as I needed them. You know, what did I heard Andy Iannocco, the way he described it was, he said it was like you know, Survivor, but in reverse. The apps had to be voted onto the machine, you know, but it's true. You know, it's like, I have a bunch of crap on my Mac. Do I need all of it? Well, let me see if I need it. Let me live for a week. Yeah. And, you know, I did it, I think, just before I went to South by Southwest, yeah. Right? I got the machine like 3 days before, and I installed the stuff I needed, but that was it, you know, and no problem.
You know, another thing, I don't know if it's it's not a ramp, but it's a suggestion, is, you know, don't be a mess, man. Don't be a slob. You know, keep stuff, I mean, I see so many machines. The thing is, a lot of OSs, Windows and Mac and others, they kind of lay things out the way they do for a reason. So, of course, you know, on the Mac, you have different places now in the sidebar. You have applications, movies, music, documents, pictures, downloads, stuff like that. Put stuff away. Don't litter your desktop full. You know, and I do this sometimes, too. I admit I'm guilty. But I've seen some machines where the desktop is literally being used as the file system, as the place to store everything. And it's scary sometimes that I see people that can work like that, because it's just an explosion of files on the desktop. I mean, it's kind of interesting looking, but, you know, try to use the folders for their intended purpose, and it'll make, you know, you'll have much less headaches when you migrate over, because you'll know all your documents are in your documents, all your pictures are in your pictures, all your movies are in your movie, and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, Pete has a good piece of advice that I actually do. And that is, anytime you get a new app, take your serial number and store it somewhere. I use Yojimbo to do it. And you know, it's got a great little interface for storing serial numbers. And then that way you can copy and paste them right back. Usually you can copy them and then paste them right into the dialog where you're installing the app. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference when doing something like this, because I know I've got every serial number for every app that's important to me for the last 3 years, all on my computer 100% of the time.
Yep. And I use the, cheapskate version, which is Stickies.
There you go. Yeah.
Stickies, you know, as long as you back up all that data. So you have, you know, I got one sticky, which has, information about, you know, well, different types of information, but I maintain them on a regular basis and they're saved on a regular basis. So, that again, it's quick and easy and it's built into the OS. So
there you go.
To give it a shot.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, Yojimbo syncs with Mobile Me, but of course it doesn't work. So I've reverted now to syncing Yojimbo with the Dropbox, and it's actually great. Mm-hmm. I store all my data there. The only trick is I can't have Yojimbo open on more than one computer at a time, but it works. So do you have a Pete, you said you want to stump the geek question?
Oh, I do. Yes.
Okay,
John
go.
Tried to shut me down, too.
All right. Well, yeah, that's all right.
No, but it kind of came up out of that discussion a few shows back over the power line bridge.
Yeah.
And all that. And it just hit me the other day, and I haven't tried it yet, and I'm wondering what you think of this. If I were to take one of my Airport Expresses, plug it in, and plug my Slingbox Cat 5 cable into that, would that work? Or is that Cat 5 only one way? Is that supposed to be an inbound?
Okay, so you want to use the Airport Express as...
essentially an air bridge.
As a bridge, right. You want to use... You want the wireless link to be the bridged link, if you will.
For the Slingbox.
For the Slingbox, and then you want to share it down. I don't think that it will do it, but there is the Linksys... what is it? They call it the Wet 11.
Oh, okay.
John, do you know, and there's a Wet 54 for the 54G. Okay. John, do you know if the Airport Express can be put into that mode?
I don't know enough about the Slingbox.
No. Okay. So think of it this way.
Any network device.
I have a wireless network, but I have a device that won't go wireless that needs to plug in Ethernet. So I need a way to bridge from wireless back to Ethernet. Will the Airport Express do that? Will it do WDS or whatever and yet share that out with its lone Ethernet port?
So you want to share a device that's plugged in via the Ethernet port? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I've got a router somewhere else in the house. It's broadcasting wireless.
Right.
I want that wireless signal to reach out to a device that does not connect via a wireless device. So I need to now bridge wireless to Ethernet somewhere else. And I don't know if the Airport Express will do it, but I do know.
It has a bridge mode. So
yeah, that's true.
I'm guessing it probably would work. Is that anything that's, you know, plugged in by the
Ethernet? It has a bridge mode, but can you connect the wireless to an existing network and bridge it that way? That's really the question.
Somebody needs to send me a Slingbox and then I'll try it out.
Oh, there you go.
Well, you could do it with your...
That's what I was trying to shut you down. No.
Sorry.
You could do it with your MacBook.
Nope.
You're going to connect your MacBook wire via Ethernet to the thing.
I can't.
All right. Well, the definite solution is the Linksys.
Sorry.
It's the Linksys. It's called the WET54G. And it's a wireless Ethernet bridge. It's $80. It connects. It does exactly what we're talking about here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Because I was just in a.
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I can.
Is that you can't run more than one power line bridge. It starts colliding your data and all that.
No. Yeah. And one other thing I heard, and I actually deferred it from this show because I want to talk to the power line folks about this or the Netgear folks about it is. From what I understand, we had a couple of listeners write and call in that said Powerline only works if it's on the same circuit, that it won't
or
circuit
segment.
Hop.
I've heard of this. Yes.
It works much better on the same circuit. And because I know for a fact that I had mine on separate circuits.
Okay.
But because I did a lot of that wiring in my main circuit breaker box when I finished my basement for that home theater.
Okay.
So it was on a separate circuit. When I moved it to the same circuit, it worked 100 times better. It still worked.
Now you're talking circuit. Do you mean like the same fuse?
Exactly.
So like I have same, living room, switch. You know, wall outlets, which are all run, I guess, in series, right? Or parallel series, whatever.
Maybe in series, right?
Yeah.
Well,
parallel.
Yeah. Sorry. But okay. So if they're all in the same fuse, that's what you're calling a circuit. Okay.
Yeah. We don't use fuses. Do you have fuses in your house, John?
Circuit breakers, would hope.
You have fuses in there, or you have just the circuit breaker?
Yeah, circuit breakers.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah, I think I got 100 amp service. Yeah, but they're all, I think the biggest one is like 40 amps. I think that's the...
Yeah, so if they're on the same circuit breaker, it works better, but it does work...
Jumping circuit.
It does. It will jump circuits through the box nowhere near as well as if it's on the same. But as I mentioned one time... I did try and put two different power line bridges in, and I essentially wound up with a bunch of colliding data, apparently, because neither one worked.
Oh, interesting.
So as long as I was on one, and you had one power line bridge, it worked great.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I'll try that experiment with my Express.
Yeah, that'd be good to know. Yeah, I mean, what's an Express cost these days?
$79.
Oh, okay. So
I thought they're. Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Get a refurb for $79.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All sure. Right. They're great for travel. They're awesome for travel, especially when your hotel doesn't have wireless.
Right.
So did you experience the Google meltdown this weekend, Dave?
I saw people.
All sites were dangerous.
Yeah.
Or all sites were. You know, I know what happened. Someone tried to Google. You can't do that, man. If you try to Google the term Google, it causes like a.
Boy, that's a Duluth from hell, isn't it?
It melts down.
Yeah.
Huh?
Somebody did it. But yeah, apparently the database that they use for their, you know, flagging sites that are potentially bad. Apparently what happened is someone in that data file, they included the entry slash, which meant
everything.
Nice. Oops.
Nice. Wow.
Of course, that sucks. You know, a great source, which is the source of, oh, so many wonderful pieces of data, is Twitter. If you hit the Twitterverse, you'd know immediately that something really weird was going on in Google.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I had fun last night with the, how about that game, man? You know, it was fun. I thought Twitter would melt down with all the people, you know, slinging comments about the game and the commercials and stuff, but they did pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it held up.
I was rooting for the Cards, but.
It was a good game.
They blew it. They could have had it.
Yeah. Okay, contact info. Yeah, because we don't want people to have to use Google to figure out how to contact us in the event that Google says
we could be harmful.
That's right.
You know, someday we may go bad. But anyways, contacting us. Yes, you know, the best way, I think, best way, 206-666-GEEK, which is?
4335. And you can email us, text or audio or video if you care to. Pictures, yeah, whatever you want.
Video, yes. Oh, we've had video.
Yeah.
They've been excellent.
That's right. That's to feedback@macgeekgab.com. That's macgeekgab.com. Feedback at in front of it. Got that? Don't do it backwards. Otherwise, it'll bounce.
So you're telling me feedback@macgeekgab.com.
That's what I said.
Send your email. Okay.
That's right.
Now, and you know, we still get, I don't know, in theory, Skype should work. And that would be macgeekgab.
Yeah.
But I still get people. I've had people tweet me and write me saying, it's not working. Yeah. So please try. Emailing us an audio file, I think, would be not quite as easy as Skype. But sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, and then iTunes comments. If you've got a little bit of extra time in your day, go write an iTunes comment about the show. We really appreciate it. It always helps. iPhoneAlley.com is, there it is. Look at that. See, we jibber jabbered for
band
a while.
Froze.
And the band froze. Yeah, it's cold outside. We got to put antifreeze in the instruments so that they can keep playing. iPhoneAlley.com is Michael Johnston's home when he's not converting this to AAC for you. CashFly is where all the bandwidth comes from to get the podcast to you. And the podcast marketplace includes the A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebones Software, Text Expander from Smile on My Mac, and Notebook from Circus Ponies, all through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. And that's another one. I think we're back here next week. I'm sure we are.
Think so.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, I want to watch Heroes, man. Heroes, season premiere, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you're not into it, I know, but...
Only so much bandwidth available.
True. Just don't steal that bandwidth, because, you know...
Yeah, you don't want to get caught.
Made up.